Previously on Heroes.
I think I found someone to fill Joseph's shoes. How do I look?
Like everybody else.
I've never met you before.
You pulled me from the 424 bus after it crashed at Lexington and 53rd.
What made you become a paramedic?
I wanted to save lives instead of watching them pass.
You're exactly who I hoped you'd be.
Hi, I need a file. Who are you listening to? Talking to myself.
At work, Peter notices Emma's headphones aren't plugged in. Then he sees her playing cello on the street.
Seriously, what are you? A vampire, an alien, some kind of freakish government experiment?
I saw this girl on YouTube. She was born with this gene that doesn't let her feel any pain.
I didn't tell her. She just found out. Gretchen is not the enemy. She's just a girl, and she's the only friend that I've made. This is my mess, and I'm gonna clean it up.
I'm tired of keeping the secret to myself.
Claire heels in front of Gretchen.
Do you want to be my roommate?
To closure.
To closure.
In the dark forest, two hands suddenly reach up through the ground from the grave. Having been buried as Nathan, Silo slowly sits up and gasps for breath. Now silhouetted in the moonlight, Silo walks on unsteady legs along a road. A car's headlights approach him from behind. With his hand on his head, Silo staggers on a little further. Then the cop car pulls up alongside him.
Have a little too much to drink?
When Siler turns and raises his hand, revealing the bullet holes in his shirt, the detective climbs out of the car.
On the ground! Hands behind your head! Down! Now!
With the detective training his gun on him, Siler drops to his knees. Heroes, created by Tim Kring. Chapter 4, Hysterical Blindness. At the carnival, as people are making their way to breakfast, Edgar wheels a large blue chest past the table.
Mind your back. Watch your back, Lydia.
A woman rests her red-hot hand on a waffle grill to heat it up, then Samuel comes over.
This is Commie's Unparalleled Blueberry Waffles. This is my favorite part of the day. It's full of possibility.
Before the inevitable monkey wrenches come looking for us.
But more than anything, it's about being with all of you. I know grace is a supper thing, but every morning, I thank heaven and earth for our family. Sadly, Joseph's death has left us an empty seat, a broken circle.
I feel like we're on the way to mend it. There are lost lambs out there. They're like us. They're hiding, alone.
Pretending to be that which they are not. Sad, pathetic. These people, they desperately need what we have. Understanding, unconditional love, family, trust. Who are we to deny anyone that? Today is an important day for us, our family, and for one of them, too.
He lays his hand on the empty chair.
Because by day's end, we will have a full table again. Eat!
At Arlington University, Claire and Gretchen are in the dining hall.
Okay, I gotta ask, what's with the ear-to-ear smiley?
This is cool.
Drinking chocolate milk?
No, me. In college. In a dining hall with my new college roommate, no snipers shooting at me, no serial killers hunting me. It's a refreshing change of pace.
Yeah, TDM can be such a thrill.
I have been chasing normal life forever, and I finally got it. I mean, don't get me wrong, the chocolate milk is awesome. But right here, right now, is full of possibilities. I can be anyone.
Claire Bennett, you can't escape your destiny. I'm Becky Taylor. Phi Alpha Rush Chair? Your mom, Sandra's sorority? Your mom was in a sorority?
She totally was. Hi, Becky.
Hi. So, National has you on a list of legacies, but we haven't heard from you about Rush.
Oh, I'm not really sure I'm a sorority girl.
Neither was I at first. So, listen, Open Rush starts today at the house. Why don't you come by and meet the girls? No strings.
Yeah.
Why not? Gonna have to pass. Well, great. I'll see you there.
Becky scoots off.
Isn't this what we've been talking about, possibilities? I mean, I think my mom is still friends with her sorority sisters.
Sororities are just a social crutch for people who can't make their own friends.
She said no strings attached.
What's the harm?
The harm is they get you alone and replace you with Stepford Claire.
Well, okay, how about I don't go alone?
Yeah, no. No, no way.
Please, pretty please.
I'll be your best friend. I'll throw in a chocolate milk.
Oh, what would Stepford Gretchen wear to one of these things?
At the Baltimore police station, the detective who arrested Siler is standing in a room.
Captain Lubbock. I'm Dr. Gibson. Madeline.
Where's Dr. Verheid?
Retired.
You're new?
I've been interning with Dr. Verheid at AU for 3 years, specializing in psychopathy, malignant narcissism.
How many actual real-life criminal psych consults have you done?
Including this one.
When he doesn't smile, she gets serious.
So, who is he?
We have no idea, and neither does he. Found him last night covered in dirt, blood, bullet holes in his jacket. The guy doesn't know his name, what day it is, nothing.
Amnesia can be very complicated.
Let me simplify it for you, Madeline. Take out your rubber stamp and mark this guy and say.
They don't give us stamps. I'm going to need to talk to him.
In the adjoining interview room, an exhausted Siler is sitting at a table, handcuffed and hanging his head. Madeline and Captain Lubbock come in. She takes the seat across from Siler.
Hi. My name's Dr. Gibson. I'm here to help you. Can you tell me your name?
Looking like a wounded animal, Siler glances nervously at Lubbock and Madeline, then opens his mouth as if to speak.
It's been a lot of that.
Starts and stops.
Mostly stops. What are you thinking?
Could be an aphasia.
Could be what?
Any trauma to the head could result in brain damage.
It was like this when we found him.
Can you tell me what happened to you?
I was in the forest. Lost. And then I was...
He remembers being shot and struggles against his cuffs.
Take your time.
Walking. And now I'm here, in this room. In this tiny room, and I can't...
Captain, can you do me a favor and unlock these cuffs?
No. I don't make a habit of locking myself in with unrestrained lunatics.
Then can you leave me your keys on the way out?
When she holds out her hand for them, the captain deliberately puts his keys on the table, then leaves. Madeline unlocks Siler's handcuffs.
Let's clean you up. Get you some clothes. Maybe something to drink. I'm gonna help you. As best I can. Help you figure out who you are. Put the pieces together. I promise.
With a hunted look on his face, Siler has a series of rapid flashbacks to the forest. At the hospital, Dr. Coolidge comes to see Emma in her office.
Emma, I wanted to talk to you about yesterday. Are you still seeing things, the colors? I was thinking more about it.
Emma signs, "You still think it's synesthesia, that I'm seeing sound as color."
I have another theory, conversion disorder. They used to call it...
Emma signs, "Hysterical blindness."
I think this whole filing girl act is finally... getting to you.
Do you follow up like this with all your patients?
Only the ones who happen to be my daughter.
I think this whole focusing on work thing is getting to me. I've been told by more than one person that I've closed myself off from human connection. Came up. Well, careful, it's hot. So this is me trying to connect again, starting with you, my family. Have to bother to show up, at least.
You did call Nathan, right?
Yeah, a couple times, Mom. So I'm thinking if...
You didn't just talk to the aide. That Elizabeth woman is a phone message black hole.
Can we just focus on me for a second, Mom?
Emma signs, "Do you even know what I do?"
Yes, you hide in here. You're filing things. It's the waste of a brilliant mind.
That's demeaning to file clerks.
Be serious.
I am serious. When you need these files the most, don't be surprised if they disappear. Peter to Angela.
I thought being a paramedic, saving the most people possible, that would fill that hole, but I...
Angela's looking at Nathan's empty chair.
Mom.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Nathan will be fine. Let's just, go on with what you were saying. Start over.
I'm not starting over.
I thought you said it was important.
I ran into Chief Kaufman, and he said that you could restart your residency if you want. He always thought you'd make a wonderful doctor.
Emma signs, "I can't talk about this anymore, okay?"
It's been 6 years. It's time to stop blaming yourself for Christopher's death. You have to stop grieving and take your life back, Emma.
Emma grabs her coat, then turns back to her mother in the doorway.
I'm not grieving, I'm...
Not hiding. I'm not anything.
Emma.
A silence has fallen over the table, where Peter and Angela are having a bite to eat.
I gotta go. Gotta get to work.
I think I'll stay for a while.
Okay.
Maybe Nathan's just running late.
He gets his coat, then gives her a quick peck.
It's good seeing you.
Hey, hey.
Yes.
You work too much. You know that.
I do.
He super speeds away, causing a draft which disturbs his mother's sophisticated hairdo. At the sorority house.
And since 1924, it has been our charge to populate this house with girls of the utmost quality and integrity. This is, of course, where you all come in.
Claire and Gretchen join the girls.
Wait to get to know each and every one of you, which brings us to my absolute favorite part of Rush, GTKPPSD. Get to know prospective pledges speed dating. Yay! Okay, so all the girls on my right to the chairs on the right, and all the girls on my left to the left.
Should we make a break for it?
No, this is what normal girls do, right?
Really?
Scariest thing that ever happened to me. Does this count?
My mom raises professional show dogs. Show dog.
No boyfriend to speak of.
My dad works in paper. Government paper.
I mean, it's more like a series of... No boyfriends.
Hobbies.
You used to be a cheerleader, right?
How'd you know?
Gretchen told me.
Really?
So you and Gretchen both lived in Texas?
Last round, ladies, make a count!
So, Claire, I feel like I know you already.
Let me guess, Gretchen.
She's really cool. She's very edgy.
Yeah.
Claire looks across the room, and when Gretchen gives her a little wave, she waves back. Now in the city. An upset Emma is walking along a bustling street. Someone bumps into her accidentally. Looking on the verge of tears, she carries on her way. When a police car drives past, the sound of its siren appears to her like flames. She watches it pass by, then stops again at a road worker who's using a pneumatic drill. Seeing frenetic red waves shooting out of the drill, she staggers back. Without looking, she steps back into the traffic. A bus nearly runs her over, but Peter whisks her to safety at super speed, then asks, "Are you okay?"
You alright?
Emma doesn't answer. Now she's marching off down the street.
Wait up a second. Hey, wait, wait, wait. Are you okay? You almost got hit by a... I mean, that was... You almost got hit.
She ignores him, then carries on her way.
You're welcome.
Setting off again, Peter checks no one's looking, then goes to super speed away. Nothing happens. He pats his legs, then tries again. He tries a third time, but just ends up sprinting down the alley.
Oh, come on!
He kicks over a dustbin, then notices flame-like streaks of sound emanating from it. After spending a few moments looking at the bin with a curious expression, he walks on. With both hands, Samuel scoops up a handful of earth and inhales its scent. When Lydia wanders over to where he's kneeling on the ground, some way away from the carnival, he glances at her, then points to something.
Hand me that, will you?
She picks up a small sack.
Who is it? The new family member?
Why are you so interested?
You used my body to find them. I am understandably vested. Is it Petrelli? Nakamura? The Strauss woman? The college co-ed?
Claire Bennett.
Is it her? You don't know, do you?
I do not. But I felt something in my bones, in the earth. The dust hasn't settled yet.
It's a gamble. Making promises and proclamations to all of us based on a feeling.
I understand the risks. But the rewards of growing our family are worth it. We've got lots of cousins out there. Plenty of candidates. Many seeds planted.
But who will break ground first?
He crosses his arms, sending up clouds of dust.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
She walks away. Then he rubs his brow and lets out a pensive sigh. Claire's looking in her clothes cupboard.
Hey, have you seen my white sweater? It's frilly and... looks kind of exactly like that.
Can I borrow this?
No. Go ahead.
Are you sure? Because that go ahead sounded a little bit annoyed and I could just take it off.
No, don't be silly. It looks good on you.
Cool. Thanks. So I'm just going to use the restroom and then we gotta go.
Claire turns back to her cupboard. Suddenly, a book falls to the floor, making her spin around. As she picks the book up, she notices Gretchen's laptop sitting open on the desk and leans in for a closer look. She finds her own name has been typed into a search engine, resulting in a series of pages, all containing information on her as well as pictures. There are also two articles, one on jump-push-fall trajectory physics and another on murder-suicide. She quickly closes the laptop, then moves away from the desk.
Ready?
Is
everything okay?
Yeah. Why don't you go on without me and I'll catch up?
No, I can just wait.
No, don't worry about it. I mean, it's a mixer, right? I feel like we should be mixing with people we don't know. I know you already. You know?
Right. Oh. Mix master me. Okay. I'll see you.
Once alone, Claire frowns at Gretchen's laptop. At the police station, a cleaned-up Siler sips from a mug.
It's amazing. What is this?
Tea. You never had tea before?
I've never had anything. It all feels so new. Like I'm feeling everything for the first time. Hot. And it's...
He puts a handcuff to his cheek.
It's cold. It's like I
I know these things, these words, these feelings, but they're I can't put them together. They're not in my head. They're there, and then they're not. They're gone, and it's...
Scary.
It's very scary. But also somehow beautiful. All of it is overwhelmingly beautiful.
Jamais vu. It's the opposite of déjà vu. It's quite common in cases of seizures and dissociative amnesia. That's good news.
How is that good news?
I think something traumatic happened to you, and you've blocked it out. It means that the you in you is still in there, somewhere. I'd like to try a memory exercise. I want you to close your eyes and tell me the first thing that you see.
He closes his eyes.
Nothing, it's just black.
Just relax and be yourself.
He closes his eyes again and acutely hears the second hand moving around the interview room's clock.
The ticking is distracting.
What do you mean?
That clock and your watch are... they're off. Somehow the different ticks, different timing, the one is faster, much faster.
This watch has been running fast for years. I keep meaning to fix it, but... you heard that. So, this ticking thing, it's good. It's your subconscious. It's probably a clue to your past. Let's try again.
Can I see you in the hall, Doc?
She looks displeased by Lubbock's interruption.
I'll just be a sec. Okay?
Siler nods, then Madeline joins Lubbock outside.
Ava's just kicked back a fingerprint match. You got an idea.
Peter arrives at the hospital for work and instantly goes to Emma's office. Seeing she's not at her desk, he wanders off down a corridor and takes a look around. Hearing the singing, he stops outside a room. Through the window, he sees a small group of children singing for some patients and staff, wisps of warm, colourful light floating up from the young choir. As he gazes in wonder, he notices Emma looking in from the opposite side of the room, similarly transfixed by the colourful waves. Feeling his gaze, Emma looks at him and frowns. She glances at the wisps of sound, then realizing that Peter's looking at them as well, spreads her hands out in front of the colors, points to her eyes, then looks at him questioningly. In response, he opens his eyes wide, looks pointedly at the colors, then smiles and nods. A moment passes between them, then they share a hesitant smile. A little later, he joins her.
Colors. You saw him too?
She stands in front of him, then signs that she saw the reaction on his face.
You can't. You're deaf. So, you read lips? All right, I must have gotten your ability on the street.
Ability?
This is new to you. Okay, there are people, like us, who have abilities. They can fly and teleport and read minds.
Sometimes I misunderstand, so can you...
She makes a writing gesture, then grabs a sheet of music and a pencil for him. When he writes flying and teleporting, she looks skeptical.
That's crazy.
Is it?
He presses a piano key, creating a soft pink wave of light. She presses a key as well. Sitting side by side at the piano, they begin testing their newfound synesthetic ability, playing the keys and sending out colorful wisps of sound. Emma smiles to herself, watches Peter finish pressing two keys, then plays a series of single notes herself. A pale greeny glow emanates from her hands, fusing together with the soft pinks created by his notes. He checks over his shoulder to make sure no one's watching, then rejoins her in the duet. The more firmly they press the keys, the more intense the colour. With their faces periodically bathed in the glow from the sound, they exchange a look and a smile. The colour splashes against the wooden back of the piano in flushes of pink and green.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Why me? Why now?
That I don't know. Maybe we could get lunch tomorrow. Figure it out. Get you out of the file room.
I'm fine with the file room.
No, I didn't mean...
It's fine.
When she leaves abruptly, he watches her go, then sighs. Wearing a red dress with thin straps, Claire tentatively arrives at the sorority house mixer, where the party's already in full swing. She looks into a room which is crammed with girls dancing, then wanders back to the hallway, where Becky taps her on the shoulder.
Claire!
Hey!
Hey! I'm so glad you came back. I was worried you'd get cold feet.
No, my feet are actually very toasty in here. It was nice to meet the girls. Good to expand my social Venn diagram into more circles.
Well, then why stop now, right? Kara! Claire Bennett, Kara Hayback.
Yeah, hi. I think we met at the GPP.
Did you know that you're both ex-cheerleaders?
You too?
I had spirit, yes I did.
What made you quit?
Sounds stupid, but I kind of hated the cheerleading part of cheerleading.
That does not sound stupid at all. I like the bus rides and the bake sales, and I rocked a mean poster, but football's kind of...
pointless and boring.
Exactly.
Is that why you got out of the business?
No, I just... Watch out!
Suddenly, Claire pushes Kara back, then a sharp-ended flagpole drops down and stabs the ground at their feet. When Claire looks up to see where it's come from, she sees Gretchen standing on the landing above, looking back down at her. Claire leaves. At the police station, Lubbock enters the interview room.
Hands on the table. Palms down.
Where's Dr. Gibson?
I sent her home.
But no, she was here. She said that she came here to...
She was here to tell us who you are. But now we know that, Gabriel. You're a watchmaker from Queens who murdered your own mother.
Did you say watchmaker?
I also said murder and mother. Now hands on the table.
I didn't do anything wrong. I would kill my mother. I would never...
Lubbock unplugs the CCTV camera.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna use this interrogation room for interrogation again. I'm gonna get a confession from you about how you killed your mother.
I didn't kill anybody.
They're gonna throw you down a hole forever.
Siler remembers the forest grave. When Lubbock comes at him, Siler raises his hands defensively and sends the captain telekinetically flying through the two-way mirror. Siler looks at Lubbock's motionless body, then stares at his hands in wonder. Madeline strides across the underground car park. She gets into her car, then looks at a file on Gabriel Gray. Next to his photo is stamped in large red letters, "Wanted for murder." Suddenly, all the lights go out.
What are you doing?
You said you'd help me. You promised. You promised. You said you'd help me. You promised.
Claire is pacing the floor when Gretchen arrives back at their room.
I didn't do it.
I didn't say you did.
But you were thinking it, weren't you?
Gretchen, you were the only one there.
Why would I do something like that?
Maybe because I was making new friends, maybe because you wanted to expose my freakiness to everyone.
Do you actually realize how ridiculous that sounds?
I saw what you've been looking at on your computer, the stuff about me.
What were you doing snooping on my computer?
I wasn't snooping. A book fell, the computer turned on, and I saw it.
A book jumped off my shelf and begged you to invade my privacy?
Yes, it did.
So I Googled you, so what's the big deal?
I saw the stuff about Annie, too. Can you honestly tell me you had nothing to do with it?
Wow. That stuff that happened to you really messed you up. You're a crazy kind of paranoid.
Paranoid? No. Paranoid is... This is a pattern. The Annie thing, the accident tonight, the computer, the speed dating. I mean, talk about me much?
I get nervous talking about myself. You're just more interesting.
All I wanted was a normal life, and I trusted you.
I didn't kill Annie. And I'm not stalking you. Okay, maybe I'm a little bit stalking you, but it's not what you think, it's just...
She reaches out and kisses Claire tenderly on the lips. Claire's gobsmacked.
I have a crush. I'm crushing on you. Say something.
Claire Bennett, Gretchen Berg, please accept this bid to join the Psi Alpha Chi Sisterhood.
Claire looks at Gretchen, then turns back to the sorority sisters with a hesitant smile. At the carnival, the tattooed Lydia is sitting with her back to Samuel.
It's getting a little late for Hail Mary passes.
Says you.
He injects more ink into her back, but no image forms.
Nothing.
Nothing.
When he throws away a rag, an invisible figure catches it.
Hello, Rebecca.
Becky materializes.
I'm missing bid night, Uncle Samuel.
Sure they can carry on without you one night. I wanted to check on your work with Claire Bennett.
Well, we're sisters now, so there's that.
You're doing everything you can to isolate her, push other people away, push her in our direction.
Honestly, I feel like all I do is push.
What made you quit?
Sounds stupid, but I kind of hated the cheerleading part of cheerleading.
That does not sound stupid at all. I like the bus rides, the bake sales, and I rocked a mean poster, but football's kind of...
Pointless and boring.
Exactly.
Is that why you got out of the business?
No, I just... Watch out!
An invisible Becky throws the flagpole over the balustrade, so that when Claire looks up, she only sees Gretchen. And it's Becky who pulls the book off the shelf by Gretchen's computer to grab Claire's attention. When Claire discovers all the pages of research on her, Becky smiles. Annie opens her window, then Becky pushes her out. When Claire returns to the room, Becky's invisible again.
Hey, I didn't see you leave the party. Yes, you're still there. And you left the windows open.
Claire looks down and sees Annie's crumpled body lying in a pool of blood, glances around the room, then rushes out. Becky gets out a suicide note, plants it on Annie's pillow, then leaves as well. Back at the carnival,
I don't suppose she's on her way here to us now.
No, it isn't her, not yet. But I think your dust has finally settled.
Samuel turns and stares at Lydia's back.
Get back to campus, Rebecca. Looks like we're pulling up stakes.
He smiles. Madeline's driving down a dark country road with Siler hiding in the back.
I'm not a killer.
Well, you're a kidnapper and a carjacker, and you beat up an entire city precinct somehow.
He was gonna throw me in a hole. Hurt me, nobody believes me except for you.
I don't even know you, Gabriel.
No, that isn't my name. I close my eyes, but it doesn't feel like me, it's not me.
Well, it sounds an awful lot like you. Watchmaker?
Yeah, I know. Your watch, I heard the ticking, but it can't be. I know I'm not a killer. You know that.
You're right.
Suddenly, she stops in the middle of the road and climbs out. Siler gets out as well.
What are you doing?
If you're not a killer, then by definition, you won't kill me. Take my car wherever you need to.
No, I need you. I need your help.
You don't even know me.
I don't even know myself.
Turn yourself in. Let the police figure out what happened to your mother. Let me figure out what happened to you.
Okay, I'll...
He drops a gun at her feet, then turns and sees several police cars approaching. Lubbock gets out and takes aim at him.
I want to see your hand. Now!
Do what he says. He's turning himself in. Put the guns down, please. Please, put the guns down.
When Siler's hand sparks electricity, Lubbock shoots him several times in the chest, and Siler stumbles backwards into Madeline. Together, they tumble down an embankment. They both get to their feet, then she looks on in shock as the bullet wounds in Siler's chest begin ejecting the bullets. He feels around his torso, which is now miraculously self-healed.
What the hell was that?
I don't know.
They see the police approaching.
Go. Run! Run!
Siler takes off through the dark woods. Emma arrives back in her apartment. As she looks around the room with an air of despondency, her gaze settles on a cello and she looks about her in surprise. Then she smiles. Now Emma's sitting on a chair playing the cello, as the warm pink and purple wisps of sound float up around her. Her smile falters, and a faraway look enters her eye. As Claire, Gretchen, and the sorority girls walk through the dorm corridors carrying candles, Becky materializes behind them, then follows them with a smile. Peter arrives home after work.
So much for human connection.
Hero appears.
Peter Petrelli?
Hero.
Hero collapses.
Hero?
With her biomedicine degree from Arlington University hanging on the wall, Emma's playing becomes more and more impassioned, the now orange sound waves becoming so strong that a crack forms down the wall, and she stares at it, open-mouthed. Siler's running through the dark woods with the police hot on his heels. Wearing police-issue grey jogging pants, he scrambles up a slope, then a bright light flashes in the trees. He stops dead in his tracks. The colourful lights of the carnival appear in front of him, with Samuel standing at the entrance beckoning him closer. Siler looks over his shoulder, sees the police closing in, then turns back to Samuel, who's still gesturing for him to follow. After quickly weighing up his options, Siler hesitantly follows Samuel towards the carnival. The police, Lubbock and Madeline climb up the slope towards where the trees are bathed in the reflected lights of the carnival. At the top, Lubbock sweeps his torchlight around, then stands with Madeline looking confused. The clearing where the carnival was moments before is now deserted and just a dark, empty space. Elsewhere, Samuel is leading Siler through the entrance, where a sign for the Sullivan Brothers Carnival is lit up above the door.
It's okay, brother. You're safe here.
Where exactly is here?
Home.
Siler stands, taking in the bright lights of the stalls and carnival rides with wonder. To be continued.